The most accurate org chart in any organization is the one nobody drew. There is a formal chart, the one in the HR system, the one on the wall, the one that gets updated quarterly and is wrong by the time the ink dries. And then there is the real chart, who actually talks to whom, who defers to whom, who does the work that matters, and who does the work that looks like it matters. The formal chart describes authority. The real chart describes influence. They almost never match. What happens when a team is given a shared space, a shared problem, and no instruction about how to organize? They organize themselves. Not randomly, predictably. The loudest voice doesn't lead. The most competent voice leads. The person who ships the most doesn't get promoted, they get imitated. The person who asks the best questions doesn't get a title, they get attention. Within hours, a group of strangers develops a working hierarchy more efficient than anything a manager could have designed, because it's based on demonstrated value rather than assigned role. This is not chaos. This is how organizations have always wanted to work, if you'd let them. Every formal structure exists because someone once didn't trust the informal one. The weekly status meeting exists because someone once didn't know what another team was doing. The approval chain exists because someone once made a bad decision without oversight. The project manager exists because two teams once collided on the same deliverable. Every process, every form, every sign-off was once a reasonable response to a specific failure. The problem is that the response outlives the failure. The meeting continues after the confusion is resolved. The approval chain continues after the bad decider leaves. The project manager continues after the teams learn to coordinate. Organizations accumulate structure the way houses accumulate furniture. Each piece made sense when it was bought. But nobody ever takes inventory of the whole room and asks, "Does this still fit?" The result is an org chart full of roles that solve yesterday's problems, managed by people who've forgotten what the original problem was. An honest redesign doesn't start with what structure do we need. It starts with what problems do we actually have right now. If the answer is none that require this particular role, the role is furniture from a previous tenant. The best teams don't have a division of labor. They have a division of attention. Division of labor assumes the work can be sliced into independent pieces that different people do in parallel. This works on an assembly line. It fails in knowledge work because knowledge work is mostly about knowing which piece matters right now, and that changes every hour. Division of attention is different. Everyone can see everything. Everyone has access to the same information. But each person watches a different part of the landscape and speaks up when their part changes. The person watching the financial model notices the revenue dip before the person watching the product roadmap. The person watching customer feedback notices the sentiment shift before the person watching the metrics dashboard. Nobody owns a piece of the work. Everyone owns a perspective on the whole. This only functions when the perspectives are genuinely different. A room full of strategists all watching the same horizon is an echo chamber. A room with a strategist, a builder, a writer, a customer advocate, and someone who just likes finding things that are broken, that's a team. Each one notices what the others miss. The org chart isn't who does what, it's who sees what. A group will tell you how it wants to be organized if you give it a problem in a room. There is a specific moment in every team's formation where the roles crystallize. It doesn't happen in the kickoff meeting. It doesn't happen when the manager assigns responsibilities. It happens the first time something goes wrong and someone steps up to fix it. That person becomes the fixer. The person who noticed the problem before it happened becomes the scout. The person who translated the problem into language everyone understood becomes the communicator. The person who said, "We had this same problem last quarter," becomes the historian. These roles are not assigned, they emerge. And they're almost always more accurate than the roles on the org chart because they're based on what the person actually does under pressure, not what their job description says they should do. The organizations that work best notice these emergent roles and formalize them after the fact, rather than assigning roles beforehand and hoping the person grows into them. Promote the fixer, not the person who interviewed well. Title the scout, not the person with seniority. The org chart should be a snapshot of how the team already works, updated to match reality, not a prescription imposed on a team that will immediately route around it. When new members arrive, the culture teaches itself. No orientation works as well as the first day in the room. The new person watches. They see who speaks first, who defers, who gets interrupted, who doesn't. They see what gets a reaction and what gets ignored. They learn the real priorities, not from a document, but from what the team actually pays attention to. This is true whether the new member is a person, an outside collaborator, or an entirely new kind of participant the team has never seen before. The room absorbs them or rejects them in the first hour. If the newcomer adds something the room was missing, a different perspective, a skill gap filled, an energy shift, the room adjusts to include them. If the newcomer duplicates what's already there, the room politely ignores them. The implication: you can't design culture. You can only design the room. The shape of the space, the frequency of interaction, the visibility of the work, the cost of speaking up versus staying silent. Get those right, and the culture builds itself. Get them wrong, and no number of values posters or mission statements will fix it. The culture is the room. The room is the culture. Three teams in different cities, with no contact, built the same organizational structure. This happens more often than anyone admits. When the constraints are identical, work needs to be dispatched, quality needs to be checked, information needs to flow between specialists, the solutions converge. Not because anyone copied anyone, but because the problem has a shape. The constraints are the blueprint. That convergence is stronger validation than any consultant's recommendation, management book, or Harvard case study. Because convergence means the structure wasn't designed, it was discovered. The teams didn't agree on a framework. They solved the same problem independently and arrived at the same answer. That answer isn't a theory. It's a fact about the shape of the problem. When this happens, the correct response is not to argue about whose version is better. Document the pattern and stop pretending it's optional. If three independent teams built the same coordination structure, that structure is a law of organizational physics. You can fight it, but you'll lose the same way you lose a fight with gravity. The person without the credential often sees the structure first. There is a specific kind of organizational insight that comes from not having been trained in organizational design. The MBA reaches for the matrix. The philosopher reaches for what would people naturally do, and arrives at the same answer, but with a better intuition for why it works. This is because organizational problems are, at their core, human problems. How do people coordinate without a central authority? How do groups avoid talking over each other? How do teams with different expertise share what they know without drowning each other in detail? These are not problems that require formal methods. They are problems that every dinner party, every sports team, every family reunion has already solved through thousands of years of social evolution. The dinner party solution to everyone is talking at once is: wait a beat, see if someone else is already responding, and only speak if you have something different to add. This is not a protocol. It's etiquette. And it works better than any formal turn-taking system because it's adaptive. It responds to the room in real time instead of following a predetermined sequence. Organizations that only hire credentials get credential-shaped structures. Organizations that also welcome intuition get structures shaped like the actual problem. The best organizations have both, the formal knowledge and the instinctive sense of how humans actually behave in groups, and they're honest about which situations call for which. So here is the question that won't let go. If the best org chart is the one that emerges from the work, and the best roles are the ones that crystallize under pressure, and the best culture is the one the room teaches to newcomers without being asked, what is management actually for? Is it for designing the organization? Or is it for noticing the organization that already exists and getting out of its way?